WNST, Towson, Baltimore. We are BaltimorePositive.com. We are celebrating a lot of stuff. First off, it's the holidays. It means I get to eat ham, have a good time with my friends at Wise Markets. But more importantly here, for this conversation at least, this is the first conversation of the 32nd year of Baltimore radio. I began my career on December the 13th, 1991. And as we look ahead here, we're going to be celebrating in my homeland of Dundalk. I can't imagine like a better celebration. We're going to be at Costas Inn. It's going to be crowded as hell because they got Christmas parties and holiday parties already booked. Pete's all nervous because we're bringing over a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. Gina Shock's coming over, going to hang out with us. All brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Roz gave me these special holiday cash drops. So I still have a few Raven scratch-offs to give away, but I have holiday cash drops to give away from the Maryland Lottery, as well as our friends at Goodwill. Spent some time at least Roseniak last month. I got a new Rolling Stone Pacifica belt I got to show her too, as well as our friends at Window Nation. 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. 0% financing. They're giving you a better deal than I got even back in August. And celebrating will be John Allen, one of my best friends, who's put Child's Play back together for M3. He is in the band with Gina Shock at the Hard Rock a couple weeks from now. I've got a Hammer Jacks documentary coming out that I've been a part of that I'm bringing in the executive producer. So in honor of rock and roll and in honor of my pal, some would say my consigliere, Bill Cole from Cole Roofing, I am wearing my Nasty Bits rock and roll shirt that you don't even get the reference. I know, right? You didn't watch Vinyl on HBO 10 years ago?
Probably not.
The band was called Nasty Bits. So this is actually a pick. This is a guitar pick.
I get it.
Yeah. So the band was fronted by Mick Jagger's kid, like the actor.
Uh-huh.
And it was the greatest series that nobody watched other than me and John Allen. And John Allen hated it, and I loved it. I couldn't get enough of it. But Vinyl, look it up. Nasty Bits was the band, and it's a rock and roll week. How are you, man? I was like a real media member this week. You've been AWOL the last couple of weeks. I guess you're like the squirrels that are up on my roof are driving you crazy. How are you? Happy holidays, my brother.
Good. It's been a pretty crazy couple of weeks. Just, you know, holidays, end of year. Try and steal a couple hours, you know, for me and the family around Thanksgiving. So no, it's been nice. You know, the football's hard to watch, but you know, W's a W.
I thought this game was much more entertaining. You know, Luke and I, when we were driving out, we hit that traffic you always hit at Squirrel Hill. And listen, I learned something this week. You ready for this? Well, lying is good if you're a politician because it gets you elected, right? Or at least, you know, tell people what they want to hear. Every single time I've gone to Pittsburgh, now I've gone to Pittsburgh, you know, for football games, probably 35 times back to my Oiler days. I was there for the AFC Championship game. I was there for playoff games when Elway came in there and took their soul from Rod Woodson and those guys back at Three Rivers. So I've been to a lot of Pittsburgh football games, and I don't remember ever spending the night in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's one of those places when the games ever get the hell out, right? I've never spent the night in Pittsburgh after a game. We always leave. We always, like, whether it was a bus trip, whatever.
Right.
Have you been to Pittsburgh for games? You have,
no,
right?
No, I've never.
What?
How did
you not get in a car with me Sunday and go up?
I don't know. It's just never in the cards for me. I don't know. It was.
Are you afraid like it's a bad experience? Because Leonard Raskin said he had beers thrown himself. It's really not like that anymore. I never felt like it was all that threatening there. It certainly wasn't like being in Cleveland or New York. Or, I mean, I've been some places that were awful, you know.
Right. Really. I mean, I've done the Eagle game. So I think if I can survive an Eagle game, I can survive pretty much anything. So.
No,
I don't know.
Why not?
Black Hole back in the day seemed a little bit nasty.
It was.
I would never go out. I would never take that trip just to get abused like that. But, you know, the Eagles, sure, that's close enough. I'll take that abuse.
Pittsburgh, though, has not, like, been – it's not that it's inhospitable because there's always some Ravens fans up there. And you really stand out when you're wearing bright purple in a yellow building, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, you can look around and see where the crowd is. And I've been in that crowd a dozen times. I sat up in the stands up there watching the championship game when Flacco threw the pick to Polamalu. So we're driving back. And if you've never done it, then you won't appreciate this. But there's a tunnel. It's called the Squirrel Hill Tunnel. And it sits 3-4 miles east of downtown, you know what I mean? And you have to go through it. It's on, it's the freeway. And it's always, always, always effed up. And I thought to myself, if I ran for the mayor of Pittsburgh, all I'd have to do is say, I'm going to blow this tunnel up and do away with it. And everyone would vote for me. That's what, because I'm thinking everyone in the world has been stuck in that tunnel or going in or out of that tunnel. Sure. And as we're doing this, Luke says to me, well, that was an entertaining game for it being a third string quarterback against a second string quarterback. And, you know, and it really, it was way more entertaining than the Panthers game or some of these games that actually Lamar played in.
I thought it was pretty horrible, but that's just me. You know, I don't know. I mean, at some level, I don't even know what I'm signing up for at this point, right? Like, I really don't even know who the team is and like who I want to root to have a good game. You know, it's just a very weird. I mean, do I want DeSean Jackson to all of a sudden be the hero or, you know, DeMarcus Robinson? I mean, it's just a really weird.
At least you know their names.
It is, but it is a weird team. They have, you know, the injury bug is kind of like popping up and like Stanley's out and then he's back. And, you know, it's just J.K. Dobbins is back and then he's gone and then he's back. And like Dobbins is running at one point, whatever, he had like a 40 or 50 yard run or something. I'm trying to remember. But the only thing I remember about that play,
him getting caught.
It looked like the dude couldn't run.
Yeah.
Like there's a busted wheel there. Like like I don't know if his knee is not recovered, whether he doesn't trust it, whatever. It did not look natural. You know, I'm like, oh, he's banged up or something. But you know, look, it's a war of attrition, right? I mean, that's the NFL season. They all get hurt. The next guy's got to play. You got to figure out a way to get wins. You got to be there at the end. I mean, I don't know if you want to like talk about the problem it is when you're trying to negotiate your contract, but you can't actually be on the field. Like that has to probably be a negative in your discussions. But
well, my next columnist, if it's not on Mike Tomlin getting me a press credential for a game in Pittsburgh, would be on, will Lamar Jackson ever be healthy in December?
Yeah.
Given the way he plays and we're 0-3 really, because he was really not healthy 3 years ago at various stretches in that season. And I think the night you draft him, and I'm not going to be, I'm not beating up DaCosta because I think he's done a great job this year. But I think the night you draft him, you're sort of playing rotisserie football, not real football. If you think this kid's going to run into linebackers, I mean, look at what happened to Tyler Huntley, right? Like he got hit in a way that we've never seen Lamar get hit like that.
Right. I think the interesting part with Lamar is there's never the one moment where I don't remember if it was Saragusa or which one, but like whoever broke Michael Vick's leg.
That right? Was Adelis Thomas. Yes.
Okay. Adelis. Right. So you, with Lamar, you never get the moment where you're like, oh no, that looked bad. He's definitely hurt. His is cumulative, right? His is hips, 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 hips. You know, you keep getting hit in the same place. You keep going down this is my assumption, right? Like, I don't really know. I'm not in the training room. But
if you got tackled one time in a National Football League game, you'd hurt like hell for 5 days, right? Like, literally.
Sure.
Like, I've been down on the field. I see the violence involved in it, right? And I just think more of that is ill-advised. I mean, it just is. It's the reason no one wanted to draft him. It's the reason that Bisciotti and the brass are a little bit more leery of giving him money than they would a guy who
Joe
stood
Flacco.
Back in the,
yeah.
Somebody that it's not taking on abuse 12 by choice. 12 day. Joe Flacco did everything he could do to never get hit. That's not the way this is designed. That's not the way this cake is baked, you know?
And it's the third year where there is no just unlucky incident that gets an injury. It's literally the toll of all the abuse. And I don't know. I mean, to me, that makes it really hard to build a contract around that.
Bill Cole is here. He is Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy. We talked solar last month. It's at the end of the year here. I've got the mug. It's getting a little scratched up, but I still like it. It still feels like a little warm binky to me on a 22-degree morning. Off the field here, what's going on with you, man? Like, it's holidays, and we're talking about hams, and it's my anniversary and rock and roll, you know?
You kind of like, in passing, just mentioned that you got a press credential in Pittsburgh, and then we just kind of moved right on by that. So is there any color to that story?
There's a point in this, and this is a good, step in, pull the curtain back, Father Bill, please pray with me. You know, I could go in that direction with you on a Sunday. I would say this. I just want to do my job. So people were asking me, like, why didn't I ask Harbaugh a question? Harbaugh came into the press room. He's the only Raven. The strangest part for me, and I talked briefly with this about this with Leonard Raskin earlier in the week. I did what I always do, right? My credential was at the gate it's always at. We parked across from the Taco Bell. We always talk about getting food at that we never do or would after a game. You know what I mean? Like, Luke and I know this drill. We've been doing this a long, long time. I've been a professional for a long time. To feel welcome there was very, and the Pittsburgh people are always really nice when they're checking you in and checking your bag. They're super nice, actually. And it's always like cold as hell outside. And you're happy to just be walking in the door. So the elevators, all of it is very familiar to me, right? I've been doing this, like I said, 30 times. And to know that I'm unwelcome by the team that I've covered for 26 years and that I've been treated like manure and that I'm only there because the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers has more integrity than anybody in their building. To acknowledge that I'm a media member, acknowledge that I should be there asking questions, acknowledge that it's not some personal vendetta from a guy named Chad Steele. The truth, you know, acknowledge the truth. Right. And the truth is that a week and a half ago, I literally, and I've had all sorts of people reaching to me, lawyers, just all sorts of people reaching to me and telling me what's happened here is against the law, right? Or it's unlawful what they're doing. From a First Amendment standpoint, from a discrimination standpoint, like all of this, right? So I haven't really, like, I hit Joe Douglas in the beginning of the year, and I said, if you'll let me come cover, do my job, I'll come cover the Jets game. I heard nothing back from Joe Douglas. He has a relationship with Chad Steele. He worked for the Ravens for 15 years, right?
Right.
So this is the tribal mentality. Every single person knows that what's been done to me is wrong, right? Like every single person knows this. There's no debate as to whether I'm a media member or not, or whether right. I've done this professionally or whether I do. And what a medium, whatever standard you would put forth by any measurement that's not Greg Bader and Peter Angelos, corrupt people, I would say that I'm a media member. So I literally text Mike, and Mike Tomlin and I text each other once a month, you know, in the real world, along the course of human events. If you were to go through my phone, you'd see that Mike and I have texted 25 times in the last 2 or 3 years during the plague, back and forth. I have been in a room with him. We were together when Bisciotti blew me off. The night that Bisciotti was at the pool party at the owners meetings and wanted nothing to do with me and was laughing at me, and Chad Steele was making funny faces at me like he was going to get even with me. Tomlin and I were holding court with the Pittsburgh media and having a laugh. And I always give him the hard time about the we want volunteers, not hostages.
I hate Mike Tomlin.
Okay.
Because I want to hate him because he's the Steeler coach. But just from knowing you, I know how decent and good of a human being he is. So that just makes me hate him because I want to hate him, but I know he's like a decent dude. So like, I can't hate him. So that just annoys me because it seems like he is, I'm actually happy for him because he's in a place where his tenure has allowed him to sort of not really care about the silliness. And he seems to just like do his thing. you know, when he was younger, he had a lot of moxie, a lot of bravado, and the sideline step in thing. You know, like we've had some pretty good, you know, you could do a pretty good highlight reel with
him. We've had some run-ins with Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, right. But through the what was the hero event that you did?
And yeah, that was back in 16.
I mean, there's just been enough places along the way where the paths intersect. And then from hearing you talk, it seems like he's a pretty good dude. So,
well, I mean, and some of the Pittsburgh guys are like, is he friends with you to piss off Harbaugh? And I'm like,
right.
You know, I knew him before Harbaugh was the coach. So I don't, you know, I don't know what to say. I mean, Billick was the coach back when I met him, actually. Right. So I would just say this. I text him.
Were Billick and Tomlin together in Minnesota?
No.
Tomlin was came after.
Later than that. Yeah.
Okay.
No, they were not.
Okay. Got it.
But you're not far off by a lot, yeah. but by a couple of years. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Tomlin, I text Tomlin and I he knows the situation. Right.
Right.
And as a little aside, and this is public, but I just want to speak from my heart. The guy who does Chad Steele's job, Kevin Burns' job with the Pittsburgh Steelers, a guy named Burt Lawton, a great guy. He's been there, I think, 20 years. I mean, I there was a PR director before Burt, but I don't really know him. Right. I mean, Burt's been right there forever. Burt had a real tragedy. His daughter was hit by a car, and everybody's sending prayers out, and there's a lot of trauma. And the Steelers are really going through. I mean, that's everybody in the organization loves him, his daughter. So there's a real thing happening there that I wanted to be respectful of. And I'm like, look, I'm not going to make myself the story. I'm going to do my job. If you're going to let me in to do my job, I'm going to do my job. So I went out of my way to do my job, right? Like, so I didn't ask Harbaugh a question because I didn't have a question to ask him. He's going to lie anyway. And he's quick to get off the podium. And the thing about Harbaugh in these post games is when they're trying to get rid of him and when he doesn't want to be up there, they bring three more players in to make the planes ready to land. And that expedites getting him off before any real questions come. And all he does is start to praise the players that are sitting next to him. The minute they walk in, he goes into, I'm going to kiss my players' derrieres, and they're the best here, have at it. And then, you know, especially after a victory in Pittsburgh like that with a third-string quarterback, the third-string quarterback's waiting to give the only press conference he may ever give in the history of that. Right. Like, literally, just won a game from I mean, Clint Longley type stuff. I mean, crazy stuff, right? So it really was, and he said, this is a one for the ages, and I'm like, I've been here for every one of them. Well, I was in there joking around with the five guys who don't like me either. Zrebeck, Hensley, those guys. I mean, they had, none of them came up to me and said, hey, dude, what they're doing to you is effed up. You know, like so here's the weird part. I do my job. I'm there the whole time, sitting in the seat. Pretty much I've always sat in. They didn't let me sit like next to Luke. I was like three down. So I was next to the Baltimore beatdown dude, which is cool. I told him we need more media here, not less. I got no gripe with websites having access. There should be more professionals around this football team. And especially, by the way, by the time you and I get together next time, this is, you talk about me feeding little things at you and throwing things at you. I'm hearing that because Steve Bisciotti's a little more red than blue, that he wants to get Uncle Larry to rubber stamp new money and new lease, where John and the Angelos family are more waiting on Wes. You know what I mean? So there is a little stadium thing happening here where Bisciotti's going to get, I don't know, $600 million free dollars. A little more than Cole Roofing's getting from the government, or that WNST's getting at this point. And so there's this. They don't want any questions. They don't. So this thing is baked up the way it's baked up, right? So I go up. I get my cookies. I see Charlie Batch. Rod Woodson gives me a big hug, and I don't hug many people, but he's a Hall of Famer. I'll hug Rod. So, and I hung out with the Pittsburgh media. I hung out with the Von Paris guys, who are my friends, who move the Ravens. And Steve Gosman, they've been moving the Ravens. The same three dudes I've eaten in the press room with for 26 years. You know what I mean? Like, literally. And I always hang out with those guys. So I hung out with them a little bit. I had Mr. Rooney's roast and potatoes and a salad. It was nice, big water, awful coffee, but delicious cookies. I didn't steal any and I should have. And I meandered in the way I always do because of my back and being in the car. I was walking around a lot. This is amazing, dude. It's amazing. And I it's sad. It's really, I'm not saying this with any pride. I always talk to everyone in the Ravens organization, right? Whether it's a digital media person, scouts, front office people. Eric DaCosta sat, if he would have put his hand down and I put my hand up, we'd shake hands. That's how close he was to me. I heard him scream out loud and cheer when Marcus caught that the interception at the 1 yard line. Ozzie's right behind me. So you can go through the whole list of who travels with the team, right? Not one of them looked at me. Not one of them made eye contact. Not one of them said anything. Not on the way to the cookies or the bathroom or elbow bump or how's your wife or it's good to see you or none of them made eye contact with me. People I've known for 25 years. So that was the 5.5 hours from 10 o'clock till 4 o'clock. Then I went down to do my job. I sat in the front row like I always sit. I even offered the seat to somebody and said, if you've been sitting in the front row since I've been gone, I'll defer to you. But I sat here for 27 years. And I started to make some cracks about Terrell Suggs being in the room and Ray coming in the door and, you know, whatever. And Harbaugh comes in the door and Chad Steele's with him. Chad Steele's looking at the back of my head for a couple hours. He could have said anything he wanted to say to me, too. And Harbaugh came in, and before he got to the podium, he pointed at me and he said, "Welcome, welcome." And I said that. I'm like, "Yeah, okay. I'm here because Mike Tomlin gave me a press pass, and you expect me to have any respect for the integrity of any of this, but I'm here doing my job." So I didn't ask any questions because there were none to be really asked. And quite frankly, he was in a hurry to get off the podium. And then when that happens, I go into the locker room because Luke stays in the press room with J.K. Dobbins, with the quarterback, with I think Queen was in there. Roquan Smith was in there. And I went into the locker room and talked to Calais Campbell and talked to Tyler Lindenbaum, talked to Marlon Humphrey. I talked to Ronnie Stanley. So I met Calais and like talked to him a little bit. And that was kind of nice. He had done my show at the Super Bowl 10 years ago and actually remembered me. But he's been here 3 years and I haven't been in a space
right
to say hello to him. And after a game, it's not a time to say, "Hi, my name is," right? Guys are putting their clothes on, singing Puerto Rican music. It was, you know, it was what I've done 450 times at Ravens games. Just strangely bizarre to be to feel like I'm Darth Vader. You know, so you're asking, I've just given you the unabridged version of maybe what I would write, I guess.
It's weird. I mean, it definitely is bizarre. And you know, people deal with uncomfortable situations in lots of different ways, you know. I don't know. You know, they clearly probably listen, read, hear about your reaction, you know, since it all started. And so I don't know. It's just bizarre.
Well, people
just
think I should be
so
silent about
child.
It. I'm not letting them off the hook. Like, I'm just not. Every week that goes by, I'm being discriminated against, held out, forced out, having my business suppressed, having my voice suppressed, not being allowed to ask questions as an organization without any explanation as to why. Right?
Yeah, very weird. Very weird.
Yeah. Hey, dude, you know, holidays, I've been talking about this a little bit. Because next weekend, or actually this weekend, Rafael Alvarez, free plug for him, is my blood brother from the sun. He does this like stoop speak, you know, readings during the holidays. It's very important for him to be a storyteller. And my friend Julia Beavers from Dundalk is doing a stoop storytelling about her childhood in Dundalk. And I'm wondering, give me a little Christmas story from the Cole family here. What's unique about your family in the holidays? Because you've been doing roofs for 103 years now. I keep saying 100, but it's 103. Almost 104, like in a couple weeks, right? So what? Give me a little Christmas story. What's the Christmas carol at your place?
at the expense of making this the portion of the program where people change the buttons and turn something else on, like, there are no real good stories. Like, it's all wonderful. It's fine. It's great. But I think what I didn't understand as a kid that I have an up close personal appreciation for as an adult now is like the business in the month of December has less to do with the roofing as much as it has to do with just getting the year closed out and getting everything sorted out and making sure that the 150 people who helped us do what we did throughout the year, you know, are in a position to have really nice Christmases and holidays with their family. So a lot of it turns, it's always on the people, but it turns very specifically to, you know, bonus time and, you know, saying genuine thank yous and making sure that everybody is getting hours leading in. You know, I mean, if we have snow or bad weather or whatever, then, you know, if a roofer can't work the 2 weeks leading to Christmas because we get some bad snow or rain or really cold, like that means he doesn't get a paycheck for 2 weeks, right? So how does that guy bridge that gap during that time period? So we spend a lot of time working through that sort of stuff. And I work more hours in a day and a week in December than I do probably any other time of the year trying to get things sorted out.
I work nonstop during the holidays and I look forward to it every year because it's a different kind of work. Because I'm going to go into my archives the next couple weeks and do a bunch of best stuff and find I'm unearthing things for the website. But I use this time of the year to really do sort of a spiritual growth and goal setting. I mean, I am big into all of those things keep a business going 31 years. This is the time when things really quiet down, right? And a lot of times I am traveling. I mean, I would be going to Cleveland for the game this weekend and it would be 2 days out of my life, but I'd take work with me to Cleveland and I'd sit in a coffee shop and just work, you know what I mean? Like, and watch the snowfall if there's such a thing. I don't, there's something very inspiring to me about love, holidays, family, food. A lot of things I don't have. Like, I don't have a big family. I don't have all of that, but I have this time of the year, football, right? But more than that, there's time because nobody's blowing my phone up, right? Nobody's working other than you over the next 14 days, Bill Cole.
There's an element to that. And I would be remiss also. I mean, I grew up playing a ton of basketball. My girls are currently playing a ton of basketball. So we are spending a fair amount of our weekends and evenings either practicing or playing in games in and around Baltimore City. So,
holiday Christmas Carol tournament, is that what
we'll take off 2 weeks. The problem these days is that they're still playing lacrosse and soccer and basketball. So really, I'm looking at these poor
lacrosse. How the hell are they playing lacrosse?
Talk I'm to looking me, at these poor 12 and 10 year olds who all have their knees hurt and their ankles hurt, and they're just beat the crap because they've been going so hard. So now we will shut it down for 2 weeks around the holiday and come back recharged. But it's a difficult balancing act, because I'm with you, it does represent a lot of like love and fireplaces and turkeys. And you know, like I always joked about, or I always laugh at when people talk about the arguments with their family members over Thanksgiving, right? And like the politics or the, you know, religion or what, you know, whatever the stuff that you need to avoid Aunt Susie because she's going to go Trump on you at the dinner table or, you know, whatever that's, I don't have those sort of circumstances or environments or like I see.
Well, it's nice that you like the people you get together with on the
holidays. Yeah, no, but I see them a lot, but you know, it's also sort of just kind of, it feels wedged in between, right? Work and the kids' sports and, you know, the kids have a lot of stuff and the kids have this and the kids have, so we're always doing that. And
are you up on Christmas Eve, like putting bikes together, like a Bob and Carol Brady, or no?
I have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, I go to bed and Santa just all of a sudden magically makes stuff happen
in
the morning.
It's the cookies. It's the cookies you leave him. It's what it is.
I'm a big fan of Santa. He's awesome.
Bill Cole is here. He's Cole Roofing and my consigliere. And hey, dude, you ask about Pittsburgh. So I'm like, hey.
Yeah, I it's curious, you know? I mean, it's just a bizarre.
I just don't want to. I mean, people like
story.
Think that I'm obsessed with it or like that I've written one piece. I've done 450 pieces at Baltimore Positive since the Chad Steele incident. I wrote one piece, 35,000 people have read it now, right? But I talked about it when it's appropriate, which is, you know, when it's appropriate, every Wednesday when I'm locked out, every Thursday when I'm locked out, every Friday when I'm locked out, every Saturday when I'm not flying to Jacksonville, every Sunday when I'm not at the game, every Monday when I'm not headed back, it's inappropriate every day. Right. So it's an ongoing issue for me, but like, I've been here writing about the team very fairly, very accurately, without access that I've had and should have for 26 years. And they're getting off the hook. And because of the cult part of this, I'm the bad guy to somebody. I don't know to whom, but the only losers are the fans. And I thought this when I'm in the press room in Pittsburgh and I'm like, there's seven of us here. They didn't even send Viviano. Like WJZ doesn't have any money to send their post game show at the end of the year because they're cutting budget, right? So there's Preston, Jonas, Jameson, Jeff Zrebeck, the Baltimore Beatdown, Bo Smolka, Luke, and me. There were eight. Seven without
really
me.
Weird.
And if they put me out of business and there's no Luke, there's even less. And Zrebeck, by the way, I found this out because I haven't talked to Jeff Zrebeck in 6 months. He's been on paternity leave. And he hasn't really been around a whole lot. So I'm thinking to myself, who was in the room in New Orleans at midnight? Because Luke wasn't there. You know, who's there asking them questions? And the less media, the better they like it. And they're really getting off on what they're doing to me as an organization. People who have had me in their home, people who I've had in my home, people that I've been linked to, people with tears in their eyes over my wife almost dying twice, to not even look at me. It's gross. You know, experience, I've given 26 years of my life. I wrote a check to them I was a customer for 20. I mean, it's
right.
It's gross. There's no other word for it for me. So I can't portray it as anything other than gross and wrong, but that's not going to stop me from professionally covering the team. And if they go win the Super Bowl, it'll be a great parade here. Everybody have a good time. Like I'm fine with all of that, but they need more journalists. They have enough sycophants. They have enough people that whatever they do is the right thing, no matter what, because he's John Harbaugh and he's smarter than us. I mean, that's unacceptable to me as a journalist, as a citizen, as a fan. It should be unacceptable to decent people, you know, decent community people. It should be unacceptable.
So there's like two parts of this for me. I mean, obviously I care about it and I'm concerned for you, and our friendship makes me want to understand and know, you know, what you're going through and all that. But then the other part of me is the just sort of the curiosity of the universe and business and that, and trying to understand the motivations, and unwilling to accept that it's just some, you know, emotional, silly, childish thing. I just want to assume that people don't succumb to that, but it could, I recognize that it could just be that sort of thing. Like, because the NFL is a monopoly and because they fall under the antitrust laws of this country, they are denied certain decision-making power that, you know, a private business might otherwise be able to have, right? So they fight that line a lot. You know, like,
dude,
the whole...
they own the games, they own the gambling company, they sanction the roll of the dice, and they officiate who wins the bet.
Right. So
I'm just saying, and this is all new, right. And we're 5 minutes into this, and I'm all day. People love betting on football. I mean, hell, they even got me half interested in it at this point. I know more about it than almost anybody. I should be better at betting on it if it really were a thing as information and knowing things.
Right.
I've never believed any of that because, but they're in on it. And right. somebody should be keeping an eye on that. On the
yeah,
up and up.
I think it's, I do, right. You know, that's an interesting sort of angle to go down, but just at its surface.
Well, that's where they're going to make all their money in the future.
I know. But right. I'm just saying the idea that journalists will help us sniff out the point at which this goes, becomes wrestling, right? Like, that's what we're trying. That's what we need to do.
Grant Wall was over in Qatar. My friend Grant Wall was over in Qatar. And I don't need to tell you that he has died under very, very suspicious circumstances.
Well, you
and
know,
he's a journalist who reported truth about their government.
Sure,
and
we can talk about that. Like, I remember you and I talking about him because I think he wore the shirt. Like, you were the one that told me about
the rainbow shirt.
Where,
yeah.
Right, where he wore the shirt and they wouldn't let him in. They detained him. And I was like, yeah, okay, that's pretty obvious that that would go down over there. Like, I get that. And then they started talking about that the dude died. And I'm like, what the hell? So I start digging. Like, no one, I can't find a single news piece that creates even the slightest innuendo that it's weird. And my radar was going off like immediately. Like, what do you mean? The dude died in the middle of the night in the game, during the game?
My wife was asleep and I was asleep and I woke up and I just happened to my phone like you do. And it was 9:30 because I'm old. And I looked down and someone had sent me it on Facebook. And I sat up. And then I went on to Twitter and then I couldn't go to bed. I was up to 1 o'clock in the morning.
Sure.
Because there's no way he wasn't murdered in my mind. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to have to go a long, long way to tell me that in that controlled environment that he caught a cold and had an embolism. I'm going to have a hard time believing that. Really, I am. 48-year-old guy who's been all over the world traveling, covering soccer. I'm going to have a hard time believing that.
Yeah. But who's going to dig on that?
That's
Netflix? Netflix?
You know, and I almost, before I got thrown off of Twitter, and that could be next week because I still don't know what I did.
Oh, yeah. Thrown off of Twitter. So, we should probably just start with
as
that.
As a journalist thrown off of Twitter as well.
What is that?
Yeah, we'll do that next week. I would say this, you know, the journalists were on it and I almost tweeted, and again I was thrown off right around the same time, so I didn't have a personal Twitter. I would say the only one that would investigate Grant Wall's death would be Grant Wall,
right? But he I mean, you, so once I started digging, I started looking, I mean, I'm fairly certain that that guy was very well respected. He didn't appear to have any enemies. You know what I mean? Like in his universe. But is it even we should probably stop. This is like, now we're turning into some sort of like Breitbart website or something.
No, go ahead.
I just, what I mean, how is it even conceivable that this guy would represent such a risk or, you know, threaten someone that they would do that? Now, look, I'm not going to rule out the fact that the soccer people are crazy.
To them,
right?
That he's threatening their way of life and suppressing women and suppressing people and covering up the death of migrant workers who weren't paid, who
right.
came
but
there
we
and
all
built
know
these
that
stadia.
Already.
Yeah, right.
But we all know it already. Like, so why are you gonna whack him now? Like, we all know this is sports washing. We all know that what that country is about. We all, I mean,
you
I've
want to know what more it's about, that Grant Wall's dead.
Yeah. So you think maybe he was working on something that and found out about something and somebody decided they didn't want it to get out and they knew that because of.
No, I think it's a retribution. He's here and we're not going to let him leave.
Yeah, that seems,
you know, I mean, like, That's not Breitbart-y to me. That's not even off the reservation. That's what happens to Khashoggi in that part of the world when, you know, that you are going back to the other part of the world and spreading more lies, truth, whatever their perception of that way of life. I mean, it's a different society. I mean, it really is. But again, journalists take on risks, right? And I had a journalist poop upon me on my Facebook page for my stance in regard to shining a light on what the Ravens have done to me and my organization and my business, right? That I should turn the light off and go shut up, that I just sound whiny. No. I'm reporting truths. And I said, a quiet journalist is useless, right? A silent journalist is dead. Like literally, like the minute you stop speaking truth, you no longer are a journalist. You're just a guy in the corner with nothing to say. And I think that the Grant Wall thing, from a global standpoint, for me, that the instant it happens, everyone in his space is thinking there's foul play involved here. You know, like, why wouldn't we believe that from this part of the world, knowing that part of the world? And now all of a sudden, to your point, well, the body's coming back. There is an autopsy. I am following all of this. Grant was my friend, right? I mean, and a friend of a friend of a lot of friends, right? So his family, the State Department's been involved, the Biden, like all of that's been involved. I don't know what the result of that is going to be, but certainly if there were a journalist and there were such a thing as trying to get rid of a journalist from a corrupt government that sports washed, that bought off everything, that detained him, all of that. If there was a government that would want to kill a journalist and would want to kill a famous journalist and would want to kill a journalist from this part of the world who reported truths and was one of the only ones in North America that went there, the BBC went there. The truth isn't being reported by Fox News. Fox is making money off of it, sitting there in front of the castles. So, I mean, they cried on the set, but then they move on and we'll wait for the autopsy. But what will that mean 6 months from now? It'll mean nothing. They're having a final on Sunday. And if there were a journalist that they wanted to kill, it would have been Grant Wall. That's just a fact.
Okay, I hear you. Like I said, my radar went off when, even just from the T-shirt, right? Like even just the fact that he had his run-in with them over the T-shirt. And yes, I can appreciate that certain countries, certain cultures certainly have a different value proposition around human life than others. I get it. I mean, there's a war in Ukraine right now that represents sort of like not the 2000 version of how we value human life. So I can appreciate all that, but like from my simple perspective, FIFA has nailed this. Like the World Cup's been great. Like there haven't been any, I mean, the most exciting sort of, you know, questionable part is the Argentina dude like firing the ball into the bench and, you know, maybe a little bit of a scrum ensuing after that. And it's like, Americans are going to be all over that.
There's been less diving in this tournament, like outward diving.
Yeah.
And they've legislated that through sport, right? Like there's less hitting of the quarterback in the NFL, right? Right. Like there's less time between pitches in baseball, right? So, you know, making the sport better. As an American, I like it more than I liked it 8 years ago, 12 years ago, 16 right. years ago. The weirdest thing is this, the extra time and who legislate, like it's goofy. Yeah, it's totally goofy. Yeah.
But like the fields, like I can remember, and I maybe not specifically, but we have experienced professional sporting events where the turf is a mess. And it actually inhibits the game.
Pittsburgh every year.
Yeah, whatever. Right. I mean,
it was a sandbox up there for a long
right.
time.
So here, you know, you're worried about the stadiums. You're worried about the fan. I mean, they show the fans a lot. I get it. It's television. They have a way of managing this. But there certainly seem to be a whole lot of Argentinian people there. Like, there's, you know, every team's well represented. Every team, the people seem to be having a crazy time.
Can we just give some love to Morocco just for a minute?
Yeah, well, that's right. You have an underdog in the Final Four. You got, I mean, they seemingly nailed it. And I can't understand why you would potentially jeopardize all of that to all the journalism.
It didn't necessarily need to be government sponsored, right? Or even thought to be government sponsored, right? Like, it could just be a bad actor, you know, it could be like whatever, you know, like we'll find out. And if Grant Wall died of natural causes at the age of 48, dropping dead in the middle of a quarterfinal match where Argentina's playing the Netherlands in front of everybody in the media, watching him getting dragged out of the press box, there's video of his death that I don't need to see.
Right.
You know, if all of that happened because of natural causes in the middle of Qatar, after he was detained and after he was the only journalist from this part of the world to go over and write the truth about what's going on.
I get it. Like I said, my
as a journalist has been locked out of what I've been doing for 26 years. I don't like this. I have a different sense of appreciation for what injustice can be done to journalists, you know, just in general, just injustice. And the fact that Fox takes all this money and goes over there as a media organization and pretends none of it happens because they're in on the partnership and they're supposed to be a news organization in a free part of the world. I mean, look, we've jumped the ship on Fox. I know what they are, and that's unfortunate as well. But look, Ronaldo's going to take $200 million a year from Saudi Arabia. We've got the golf thing going on.
Hold on. So, I mean, there is no shortage of corporate sponsors changing on the wall behind the field. I'm sorry, the pitch. The entire game. I mean, I saw McDonald's there. I've seen Kia. A lot of Qatari or whatever, a lot of companies that I don't know or have never heard of or whatever, but McDonald's is there front and center every game on that wall. Like, are there consequences to that?
None. I mean,
yeah, probably not. Right?
None. I mean, Budweiser gave them money and then they came to Budweiser and said, no beer.
Right.
Yeah, Bill Cole's here. We're talking, you know, it is, we do stick to sports, don't we, around here?
We find the intersection of sports and life sometimes, I think. Like here's, since we're on soccer, like, I became aware that Dallas is doing like $300 million worth of upgrades to the stadium for World Cup. And I'm like, did they just build that stadium? Like, how that stadium, maybe it's 10 years old. And it wasn't like $100 billion or I don't even know how much it was to build it. And now they're going to dump $300 million to push the seats back a little bit because it.
Well, I mean, even the Bellagio needs remodeling. You know, they come in and fix the butterflies every 3 months, you know. But for anybody wondering why you and I were all wrapped up in the World Cup thing and Terry Hazeltine, who still hasn't spoken to me, talk about representation as to why we lost here. Yeah. I mean, there could be a whole book on when 4 years from now, when this World Cup comes to America and Washington and Baltimore are not a part. Well, Washington will be a part of it. Baltimore will have his face pressed up to the glass when we should have had 6 or 8 games here and what that would have meant for Morocco to be parading down Light Street, you know?
Yeah, we're going to have to go to Philly to watch, right?
I'm not going to Philly. I'll go anywhere, but I'm not going to Philly. I'll go somewhere else with you, though. We'll have a good time.
I don't know, man. Yeah.
Somewhere where the sun's shining.
I have watched more soccer since Thanksgiving than I have in my entire life.
And you've enjoyed it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my 10-year-old will watch. She's into it. So they've got this pretty cool, like, sticker book where you can collect the stickers of all the players of all the teams. So, there's some retro old schoolness to that I really appreciate.
Hey, dude, if Messi scores a pair in the final and they win 3-1 or whatever, and he does the trickery that he does, and I mean
pretty amazing.
It really is amazing, right? Yeah. I mean, like, it's really special. And and I'm, you know, I love Argentina. I love Buenos Aires. I love Messi. I feel like I need to see him play, that if he comes and plays for Miami, I'll go throw $100 wherever I can, Philadelphia, wherever it would be, to go just watch him and be in his presence. I did that with Beckham for sure. So, hey, dude, I appreciate you. I know we ran long here. Bill calls the court. Tell me what you do other than BS with me and talk about sports washing and my media pass and Mike Tomlin's generosity and like all that. By the way, I don't – that's the wrong word, generosity. Integrity. Sorry. He didn't do anything generous. He did the right thing.
Right. So right now I would say – again, it's sort of the same reoccurring message, broken record, that I give you every time.
Call
like,
ahead.
You need to plan for your roofing work. Let's get the discussions going now so you can, you know, get it done in 23 if you need it. And then while we're talking about that, you should at least understand the economics of solar on your roof and figure out whether it's right for you, because we can help you sort all that out.
I got a solar prospect for you, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, dude, hit me this. Off air. I got a new sponsor that I literally, this sponsor, I'm not going to give it away, took me out onto his roof to show me the roof. Like, and I'm like, I've never been on the roof of a business. Maybe you need Bill Cole. So as I'm standing out there on the roof surveying, and I'm like, I almost text you.
I should have just gave him a price and we could figure it out.
Bill Cole, Cole Roofing, Gordian Energy, my pal. And we lingered longer, but that's okay. It's the holidays. It's my 31st anniversary in Baltimore radio. By the way, it'll be 25 years, August 3rd, that I've had the station. So 31 years on Tuesday and celebrating on Thursday with our friends in the Maryland Lottery, the holiday cash drop tickets. Roz brought these by Fadley's last week. We're going to be at Costas on Thursday with the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Gina Shock of the Go-Go's. John Allen's going to be with us. There's a rumor that Eddie Lauer, Steve Porch are going to come by and bang on the drums and play the bass and sing We Got the Beat and sing Our Lips Are Sealed and Vacation All I Ever Want. So that'll be Thursday at Costas. Also, our friends at Hammerjacks are going to be they've done a documentary with Louie. It's going to be fun. We're going to talk. We're going to laugh. We're going to drink eggnog. We're going to eat crab cakes. And it's going to be a good time. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, our friends at Goodwill and Window Nation. I am Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, House in Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.